From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
President Trump makes his first visit to Illinois since being elected to the White House. This afternoon, he traveled to downstate Granite City near St. Louis to talk trade.
After years of shutdowns and cutbacks, today the blast furnace here in Granite City is blazing bright. Workers are back on the job, and we are once again pouring new American steel into the spine of our country.
Farmers and producers in this area have invested in this president and this administration with their votes. And they wanted results, and they saw results yesterday.
Why did you not go to Granite City? If you could just take two questions. Governor Rauner refused to take any questions from reporters today after a publicized campaign event in the suburbs. He did not attend President Trump's visit to Granite City.
According to the State Board of Elections, what happened with the cash and check giveaway by Willie Wilson through his charitable donation does not appear to have violated any election laws, but it put him and the governor in the hot seat over the perceptions of what went on.
I learned after the fact that Dr. Wilson was handing out cash. I think that the idea of handing out cash if you're a candidate for office is outrageous. It should not happen.
I have a problem with people kind of tell me what to do my own money when I'm giving away to people in the street for the last 20 odd years.
President Trump comes to Illinois. Some Republicans were there in attendance, not Governor Rauner. And speaking of the governor, an appearance with a Chicago mayoral candidate turned controversial. You heard some of that there. We'll talk about it and more on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and joining me in studio today is Kent Redfield. He is a professor emeritus at the University of Illinois Springfield. And in our State House Bureau today, we have Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House editor, and Doug Finke joining us from Gatehouse Media. And Doug, thanks to have you on once again as well.
Thanks for having me.
Brian, I'll start with you. The president did come to the Metro East, to Granite City. It's the site of a steel plant that had been shuttered. It has fired up again and started calling back workers. And he came there. Was it a bit of a victory lap of sorts? Was that what he was there for?
It was. From the president's perspective, this really fits in with his message, which is that he wants to come in and sort of break the way we've done things for a couple of decades in this country in terms of foreign trade and what industries we emphasize. And, you know, his campaign slogan was Make America Great Again. And his vision for that is back in, I guess, the 1980s when there was, you know, manufacturing was already in decline in this country, but you could still make a good living from a union job. You didn't necessarily need to have a college degree or anything like that. You could still raise a family and send your kids to school if you wanted to on a union salary, like being a steel worker. And so there had already been, before he came into office, really, this sort of trade fight about foreign steel being dumped in America in an anti-competitive manner. The United Steelworkers, I talked to the local union president down there about a month or so ago, and he talked about this fight's been going on for a long time. But the president and his commerce secretary made it an emphasis and, you know, finally followed through on this trade case, imposed these tariffs. And right after the president announced these tariffs, U.S. Steel said it was going to restart one of the blast furnaces at its Granite City Works. A few months later, it announced it would restart the other one. Bottom line is about 500 people have been put back to work there at the plant itself. Another 300 are expected to be hired by the end of the year. There are ancillary businesses, companies that, you know, whether it's a trucking firm or potentially even restaurants that, you know, provide lunch to the people who work there, that are also bringing jobs back. This is the long story short, the president was taking a victory lap here.
And Doug, when you think about that, Doug, I mean, Brian mentioned 500 jobs now, maybe another 300, then all those ancillary jobs. We're not talking chump change here. So from a Granite City perspective, you know, I'm not looking at the broader picture of tariffs, but from a Granite City perspective, right in that area, this is something that's probably been a very positive move for them.
Oh, without a doubt. And one of the things, though, that I think you have to keep in mind is there are some skeptics out there who question just how far the tariffs issue played in this, because the plant supplies steel for the oil industry primarily. And when it shut down a couple of years ago, the oil industry was in a slump. It has since made a recovery. And so, yes, tariffs obviously played some role in this, but maybe not the the only reason for the plant reopening. And in fact, I saw a news story, and I wish I could remember exactly where I saw it, but made mention that some of the union officials at the plant had argued that it could have opened even before it did, because, again, the market for their steel products had improved, and it could have reopened earlier than it has.
Well, we did see a couple of the compression. Go ahead. Go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to add, there was, I thought it was interesting. You mentioned that these jobs are not chump change, and that's true. They're not. However, I thought it was also interesting that coincidentally on the day that President Trump was visiting, the state came out with its monthly employment figures for the various regions of Illinois. And the region that is the, they call it, we call it Metro East, but under the state it's classified as St. Louis, the Illinois part of St. Louis. Actually, over 1 year prior, the unemployment rate stayed precisely the same. There was no change in the unemployment rate from 1 year earlier. Now, there were a few, you know, there were more jobs added, but, and this is a complicated thing, but, you know, other parts of the state had seen some improvement, some had been worse, and it was about at the statewide average. It was just 0.2 of a percentage point above the statewide average for unemployment. So it's, you know, it's a lot of jobs, but it's not as though it was, you know, sort of transformative for that region from a, you know, a macroeconomic standpoint.
Well, the tariffs are certainly also playing a role in agriculture, and that, I think, you know, in other parts of the state, certainly in central Illinois and other areas, that plays a big role in the economy. We have we're looking at two different congressional candidates who appeared on the scene yesterday. One of them, Rodney Davis, who's a Republican from Taylorville, from central Illinois, represents much of the central Illinois area and a bit of the Metro East. And then you have Mike Bost, whose district runs from the Metro East all the way into deep southern Illinois. Bost flew in on Air Force One with the president. He was getting off the plane with him and really seemed to embrace, you know, Donald Trump. Rodney Davis, it's a little bit more tricky, Kent Redfield.
Yeah, oh, no question about it. I mean, this is, these jobs are in Boss's district. It's, you know, it's a plus. He has, obviously has an aggressive opponent because the Democrats believe that, you know, they can maybe have a chance to flip that seat. And the agricultural issue does cut in terms of that district. But Rodney Davis is in a significantly different situation. He's got agriculture is a huge part of his district, and he's got a lot of very nervous people about what's happening to our markets. The president came out with a plan to provide $12 billion worth of relief to farmers that are being hurt by these tariffs and retaliatory tariffs, you know, from China. And that's not a long-term solution. That doesn't deal with permanent loss of markets. You know, if people will, go somewhere else and buy their crops and are dealing with a much more stable situation, they're likely to stay there. And so, you know, it's a different situation from Boss than it is a situation from for Rodney Davis. And then we'll talk in a minute about the governor. But, you know, he's got to run statewide in Illinois where, you know, this issue cuts a lot of different ways. And as opposed to the districts we're talking about where Trump won easily and is very popular, you know, Trump's popularity in Illinois is at least 10 percentage points below what it is nationally. He's probably in his approval rating is around 30% or less. And so it's, you know, how this plays out politically really depends on, you know, where are you running in the fall?
Well, Brian, how does the governor, how did he respond, or did he respond to Donald Trump coming in and questions of why he wasn't there?
No, he really didn't. As we heard at the top of the show, Marianne Ahern, a reporter for NBC Chicago, we heard her sort of shouting questions at the governor. I guess, what do you call a doorstop when you're not actually putting your foot in someone's door, but trying to stop the governor to get him to answer questions. And as he usually does, he declined to do so. He often doesn't take reporters' questions if he hasn't said he's going to do so ahead of time, but he particularly doesn't like to take questions about President Trump, and this was no different. And it comes after just a week or so after he had embraced Vice President Mike Pence at an event in the Chicago area. So he's really, the governor's trying to walk both sides of this line. On the one hand, he obviously needs as many conservative votes as he can get this fall. People are talking about a blue wave. The Democrats are certainly adequately funded, even outspending him, which is not what happened 4 years ago. And he has a problem with conservative voters because, let's remember, he barely won the primary. On the other hand, this is still considered a blue state. Hillary Clinton won over President Trump in Illinois by about 19 percentage points. And so the governor is really trying to straddle this line of, you know, appealing to the Democratic and centrist voters who maybe are either anywhere from unhappy to loathing President Trump, and yet also ginning up some excitement among conservative voters.
Doug, this reminds me of going back to the end of George Ryan's term, like his final year. It seems as though there's probably a lot of candidates out there, maybe in Congress and others, who don't want the governor coming around, or at least don't want to appear with the governor. They may appear with the president when he comes to town, but not so much Governor Rauner. His approval rating is low. Definitely he's facing a bit of a backlash within his own party. There's some similarities here, aren't there?
There are some similarities. One of the differences, though, is that Rauner still has a lot of money to spread around. And recently he put $2 million into the House Republican organization, which will then funnel the money to candidates. So I think even if some Republican candidates don't necessarily want to have the governor standing by their side when they're campaigning, we'll certainly welcome his money when it comes to helping out their campaign funds.
Let's go to Chicago for this week, an event that took place that might have seemed as though it was pretty innocuous. The governor with one of the candidates for Chicago mayor, Willie Wilson. And yet this made the news. Brian, what took place there? What was so controversial about this?
Well, this was a church service in Chicago where both Governor Rauner and Willie Wilson, who is a wealthy, I think at least second time now, candidate for Chicago mayor, were both present. And Wilson, in keeping with what he says he's done in the past, was handing out cash. There were a number of Chicago television stations present filming this, and it is quite the sight. I think a lot of people perhaps assume that Illinois politicians hand out stacks of cash to people, but to actually see it caught on video was quite something. And literally this huge, certainly a bigger stack of money than I've ever personally held. It's the kind of thing you would see in a crime movie or something like that, with these just giant stacks of bills handing out cash to people. He says this is, you know, from his charitable contribution. It's separate from his political activities. The State Board of Elections, at first we seem to be getting some conflicting messages in the early part of the week, but ultimately it came down to, well, one, there's no complaint. There has to be a complaint for the board to do anything, and there hadn't been one, at least the last that I'd heard. And two, that if this really was through the charitable foundation and nobody was saying, you know, here's some money, vote for me, then that would be considered above board. Although one Board of Elections attorney did use the word skeevy to describe just the appearance of what was happening, which I don't think is a word you'll find in the statute books, but certainly paints a picture. The long story longer, Governor Rauner was there and took a lot of heat for being present at an event where politician hands out cash not a good look.
And he has, I think, come back on that and said that he'd not agree with that, I guess would be a good way to say it. He sort of condemned it,
But he also claimed to not know about it, although then word came out that he had been present at other events like this.
Right. He was at one, I believe it was in January, with Wilson, and the same thing happened where Wilson was passing out money, and again, I believe it was on the context of helping people pay their property tax bills, because that's obviously an issue the governor has raised, and he said even in especially in Chicago, because the property tax system there is broken, low-income minority communities bear a larger burden than more affluent areas. Nonetheless, the governor was at this event, again, I believe it was in January, where the same thing happened. Also, from what I understand, Mr. Wilson put out a notice to the media that he was going to be doing this. So it should not have necessarily come as a real surprise that he was passing out money.
Yeah, and I mean, 2 points. One, it is, in fact, illegal for a candidate to give something of value to someone in exchange for their vote. That is a violation of Illinois law. And so, but whether that rises to that, that's really up to the State Board of Elections if somebody files a complaint. But as always, it is the appearance of corruption is just as damning as corruption itself. And it's not exactly the story did not turn out the way the governor or his staff had planned. Governor supports property tax relief was the headline they were looking for, and they got a governor attends event where people they're handing out cash to potential voters, and then we make it a 2-day story by saying, well, I didn't know what was going on, and then we've got film that says, well, you knew what was going on the last time you attended one of these. And so it's really a disaster in terms of whatever the governor was hoping to do in terms of creating publicity to support his message as far as why he should get a second term as governor.
And Brian, it seems as though every week we're hearing some of these controversies, some things, missteps, if you want to call it, but the campaign of Governor Rauner. J.B. Pritzker is basically sitting there and not having to do a heck of a lot, not to have to come out and make any really tough stands on issues as much, because he's able to sit back and just kind of benefit from the negative publicity that the Rauner administration seems to be creating.
It's remarkable, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the phrase is a rose garden strategy when the president runs for re-election just by not doing much, not going out and campaigning, and just sort of hoping things are steady. Usually that's an incumbent that wants to do that. What's remarkable in this case is that it seems that the Democrat is the one who is just sort of keeping things tight. He's limiting his, Q&A sessions with the media. We saw him here in Springfield this week for the first time in, I'd say a month and a half, 2 months. And I think it was about 10 minutes we got questions. And then as is typical these days, the press person says, okay, we got to go. We got to get to the next event. And that's it. We continue asking him questions, and he just sort of like the way Governor Rauner does, just like a robot, some switch is turned off and he just barely looks at us, doesn't answer anything. That's one example of the way that they're keeping it close, keeping it clenched, and relying pretty much exclusively on television advertising. Now, that's from my media standpoint. Yeah, Ken, you might have a different perspective.
Yeah, and from, historically, the president at the White House has a rose garden, and that was the reference was to the way that presidents, particularly incumbent presidents, used to campaign, is they would go outside the White House in the Rose Garden, and they would summon reporters that would ask questions or they would make a statement, and that was the extent of their campaign. You didn't go out and tour the country, and that was above the that was below the dignity of the office, and so this is as long as your opponent is got a lot of baggage and shooting himself in the foot, then you don't want to interrupt that. And Pritzker is in a position where, you know, since he's talking about what he would do when he gets into office, he can say, I want a fair tax, and that's a, you know, a progressive income tax, and that's, you know, that's how we're going to get the, you know, all of our finances worked out. And he doesn't talk about how that requires a constitutional amendment that would take 2 years to get on the ballot. And then once you got it approved, then you would have to get legislation, you know, through the General Assembly. And so, you know, it's like, well, that's great for 4 years from now, but, you know, how are we going to deal with our fiscal problems before we get that, if we get that? And so, you know, the more that he doesn't have to talk about the details of that and can say pleasing things to selected audiences, you know, that's he's going to keep doing it.
Well, Doug or Brian, I mean, I guess that raises the question, are we being hard enough on J.B. Pritzker? Is he getting enough scrutiny?
This is a complicated question. I think, is he getting as much scrutiny as he would have in the past? Probably not, simply by, and we can get into a much broader discussion here, but the State House press corps is not the size that it used to be, and that's thanks to media companies that have laid people off and reduced the number of bureaus that are down here. There's no budget to travel to follow the candidates around. And frankly, when you have two candidates who have, if for the sake of political campaigns, effectively infinite piles of cash with which to push their own message out and create their own reality, it's not even clear to me how much media scrutiny can really overcome the just endless onslaught of television advertising and Facebook advertising and Twitter advertising and Snapchat advertising and Instagram advertising and everywhere else where these candidates are going around the media filter, so to speak, and in trying to influence voters directly. But, you know, should Pritzker be getting more scrutiny? Absolutely. But whether there's really the structures and systems in place to give him the scrutiny that he once might have gotten, that's an open question. And also, frankly, the fact that he doesn't have a public record, he's never had to take a vote as a senator or representative or sign a bill, you know, it's much more difficult to peer into somebody who's had a strictly private sector career than it is somebody who, you know, has a more traditional past, at least before Governor Rauner, as a public official.
And we've, you know, we flipped the script from 4 years ago. You know, 4 years ago, Pat Quinn had the record. You know, he said he was going to do this, and it didn't happen. Or he did this, and it was a disaster. And Governor Rauner could talk about shaking up Springfield and all of the great things that he was going to do with his turnaround agenda. So you're going to be criticizing Pritzker in the abstract. You're going to be examining the reality of Rauner's record.
Well, let me move on because we have a couple of minutes left here. Mark Janis back in the news this week. This is the former now state employee who went all the way to the Supreme Court on the issue of fair share union fees. And Doug, he has a new job. He's no longer working for the state.
Yes, even though he not that long ago professed that he loved his state job, he's decided to leave that. He's now going to be working for the Illinois Policy Institute. I guess you'd call it doing worker outreach. He's supposed to be going around telling workers about their rights and the fact they don't have to belong to unions and what have you. Interestingly, the Policy Institute has a legal arm called I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank.
The Liberty Justice
the Center, I believe. Yes,
yeah.
Thank you. And it was the Liberty Justice Center that actually provided a legal representation for him when he brought the case all the way up to the Supreme Court that ultimately said that unions cannot charge fair share fees.
Now, of course, I know that the unions, what their response likely will be on this, but and what maybe it has been so far. It could be that he just agrees with the positions of the Illinois Policy Institute, and maybe he felt as though he wasn't welcomed as much as a state employee after this among his union brethren.
Yeah,
there.
And I don't know what the work situation was in terms of, you know, where he was working as kind of in child welfare issues and things. Now, I mean, he made a point when this was all playing out about how what he wanted to do was, you know, do his job and how he valued the public service and being able to help the clients that he was dealing with. And so, you know, I'm not in a position to say, you know, whether that was disingenuous or not. Now, it will be interesting if and when he files his papers for retirement and starts drawing a state pension based on his employment with the state of Illinois. I believe that you're going to find some people associated with public employee unions who, you know, will probably point out how much money he's making drawing a pension while he's also being paid to travel the country on the Illinois Policy Institute's dime. So there's always a political angle to this.
Time now for our notes from the field. And Brian, let's start with you.
Yeah, there was a lawsuit settlement that was approved by a federal judge this week in Chicago. It was against the state of Illinois' Department of Corrections for the way it treats inmates who are deaf or hard of hearing. We heard stories related to this case of there was one inmate who apparently had been in the Department of Corrections for more than 20 years when a lawyer met with him, and though they both seemed to speak sign language, they couldn't understand each other. And this inmate basically was so out of practice because he had not been able to communicate with anyone for 20 years. That's the story I was told anyway. And anyways, the settlement requires the Department of Corrections to provide anything from hearing aids to sign language interpreters for high stakes interactions like doctor visits and disciplinary hearings, things like that. There's thought to be about 300 affected inmates in the Department of Corrections, but because there hasn't been comprehensive hearing checks until now, that number could be different.
Okay, Doug?
This last week, Moody's affirmed a bond rating for the state of California of AA3, which it says is its fourth highest. I mention that only because it was not all that long ago that California's bond rating was teetering at a very low level, as Illinois' is right now. And it was just a couple of weeks ago that everyone in Illinois was jumping up and down because Moody's improved our outlook from negative to
neutral or stable, or something.
Stable, yes. We still have a bond rating just above junk status, but at least our outlook is stable.
Okay. About 30 seconds left, Kent.
There was an item that came out today that the AFL-CIO was raising objections to the State House Inn, which is a very popular place in Springfield for people to stay and lobbyists and people to gather after the legislature is out of session because they were using non-union contractors and non-union workers to remodel the State House Inn. The reason why that's interesting is, you know, people often think that, the big union money that comes into Illinois politics is basically public employee unions. Well, they put about $10 million into legislative campaigns 2 years ago. The trade unions put in excess of $30 million. And so, this will be important in Springfield because trade unions are an important player in Illinois politics.
All right, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Brian Mackey, Kent Redfield, and Doug Finke. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. The production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station, NPR, Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.